Hi, I'm Tyra G, your host of Frankly Speaking with Tyra G. Welcome again to our virtual global gathering of phenomenal women and those who love you. You mothers, daughters, grand and great grandmothers, fearsome and generous, humble and honest, in pursuit of new possibilities and purpose. Here we dig deep and we come up strong. For those of you joining me for the first time, each month we explore a new theme inspired by you, yes, you. Together we bravely walk into places where tradition has taught us there are some things we just don't talk about. But not at this table. No matter how hard judgment knocks, it cannot come in. Beloved, here we live beyond the wreckage. Every week for 1 hour, we experience, educate, encourage, and empower each other. We share aha moments and stories that have been left in our pockets for too long. Every week, we start where we are. Each show has three segments, the first uniquely called the beginning, where I invite you in and where the table is set. The middle, where you are served the main course, where one of you or another expert joins me in the interview seat. I name the last segment, the end but not empty, because here's where I fill a virtual doggy bag with words and thoughts of empowerment and encouragement for you to take with until the next time. You're listening to Radio Fairfax, Fairfax, Virginia, on your TV, computer, or mobile device, and we are webcast worldwide on the internet at www.radiofairfax.org. Every Saturday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Should you miss us, no worry. You can catch our podcast the following week on our YouTube channel, Frankly Speaking with Tyra G. And if you feel like you want to connect with me offline, that's easy. I'd love to hear from you at tyragarlington.com. Thank you, Courtney Nero, for composing and performing our Frankly Speaking theme song and for naming it I Am Listening. This month, we are exploring a necessary and timely topic, which was selected by you. It crosses generations and cultures, and it is critical to a successful life. We are looking at our own sustainability inside and out through the lens of health. Hey, it's November, Women's Health Month as well. Women's health is dynamic, it's diverse, and it's codependent. We're going to discuss health from many perspectives for that very reason, to include physical health, emotional, spiritual, mental, and financial health. You know I like to start each show by creating a common thought space for us while we're together. I got to step back a minute and give you some information. I am so passionate about the quality of women's health. I have been up close and personal with experiences where I felt powerless and out of control as it related to my own health. I was challenged, and sometimes I wasn't sure I'd meet the challenge. I'm talking about a brain tumor, thyroid cancer, clinical depression, back surgery, chronic pain, and sleep disorder. I am committed to doing what I can to maintain healthy habits that sustain me, improve me, and prevent me from ever visiting those dark places again. So to get ready for today's show, I did some research. I uncovered both how women and pain have been perceived historically and where that relationship is today. We understand pain in others best when we have a real or imagined shared experience. If you haven't had an aching back, it's hard to empathize with the person who says, "Oh, my poor aching back." Listen, I didn't know until after my car accident, 6 titanium implants, and a long rehab program what those words really meant. However, pain in women is frequently both difficult to visualize, like you could a cut, and something that's difficult to explain if you're working with a health professional that hasn't experienced it. I'm going to be quoting from LibertyFund.org, Aristotle. Even ancient Greeks pondered how to view pain in women as early as 400 BC. And to address the complex range of suffering and complaints in women, ancient Greek physicians came up with a novel explanation. Catch this. Called the wandering womb. Really? The womb was believed to move upward in a woman's body whenever it became hot and dry, searching for a cool, moist place and causing stress and damage to her physical and mental well-being. Boy, am I glad this isn't 400 BC. Hippocrates used the term hysteria, which comes from the Greek word hysteros, for womb, to describe a wide variety of female emotional and physical conditions. Now, this drove history to label women in pain as weak, inferior, or irrational. In ancient Greece, Aristotle used this concept of hysteria as proof that women were unsuitable for public office. I guess this is where we do a happy dance and cheer on the fact that we've come a long way, baby. While such beliefs seem far-fetched today, the diagnosis of hysteria continued to be commonly used in European medical practices to describe a wide variety of symptoms in women for the next 2,000 years. Only in 1980 was it removed from the Manual of Psychiatric Disorders. Now, it's also been a long household debate, who is really the stronger sex, men or women? It's no secret, physically, men often outperform women. But women have long argued that the grueling experiences of childbirth and the monthly hormone fluctuations validate their strength and superiority as a tougher sex. More women than men suffer from chronic pain, described as pain that persists more than 6 months. From pelvic pain, headaches, multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, jaw pain, bladder pain, fibromyalgia, chronic regional pain syndrome to painful teeth. Now, this next thing I found was interesting and new to me. It said, chronic pain serves no physiological purpose. So picture this, ladies. Here you are. Chronic pain. You're in the fourth month of just constant pain. And you can't sleep. How are your days working for you? After all, sleep is free, but it's hard to get enough of. It's easy to do for most of us and restores us in a way that no wonder drug could. According to the National Institute of Health, 50 to 70 million people are affected by sleep disorders in the United States. Sleep disorders are linked to other chronic ailments such as hypertension, diabetes, anxiety, and depression. Furthermore, having poor sleep quality reduces your productivity. This reminds me of my long working days at IBM, trying to get ready to close the deal. There I was in front of the CEO, having a hard time concentrating, waiting for the adrenaline to kick in. They say the overall average adult should have, over 18, I should say, should be getting 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night. However, 40% of American adults get less than 7. So what's the relationship again between sleep and pain? Medical researchers have been trying for a long time to clarify the association between sleep disturbance and pain, but very little is known, and only a few key findings indicate that sleep and pain are linked. If you suffer with pain, restful sleep might provide some relief. But, pain can also make it hard to go to sleep. So how do you put an end to a restless night? What is sleep habit savvy? What pajamas could you wear for a good night's sleep? Well, I'm glad you asked, because I have a guest in the studio today who's passionate about some of the answers to these questions. And after our break, you will meet him. Stay close. And we are back with a wonderful guest. And the theme, I actually borrowed this theme from something that belonged to him, and it's called Relief Has a Name. Today, Dr. Elliot Alfer has dedicated his life to providing lasting relief to patients with sleep disorders and jaw pain. Now, I didn't know him when I had that. I know him now, though. Dr. A has pioneered a conservative, non-invasive approach utilizing computerized and verifiable diagnosis methods to treat craniofacial pain as well as sleep disorders. Dr. A, tell our audience who you are, why you are, why you're so passionate about this topic.
It's a very, very important topic. Sleep is very important in our lives, and sleeping pain-free is even more important. We need to get a good night's sleep. We need to get the proper levels of sleep. We need to get the proper amount of sleep so the body can secrete hormones to repair itself. And if we cheat on that end, we're withdrawing from the bank and not putting back. So if we're getting 7 hours sleep instead of eight and a half hours sleep or less due to our very, very busy lifestyles and not sleeping in the proper environment, then our bodies are going to suffer and start breaking down.
So how did you first, you know, as you were talking, I'm thinking right now about two of my goddaughters who are professionals. They have children. They have carpools. They have extra. They're exhausted at the end of the day. And they have dinner. And they have homework. And then they have to do their own homework. That's not leaving them a lot of time for 7 or 8 hours because they have to get up and start over again. So what do you say to them?
They have to be allowances made in order to get the proper amount of sleep. And if you do get a period of sleep, it has to be the proper amount of sleep. You have to be able to breathe. You have to be able to get the oxygen through your nose, through your mouth, to your lungs, and to all your organs. And that's part of what we do.
So what was the trigger that walked you into this space, pain and sleep? What happened?
I was practicing craniofacial pain and jaw pain for many years. And my patients would come in and tell me, well, you know, my jaw feels so much better and I don't have any of that pain, but I've stopped snoring and I'm sleeping well. And I, of course, shrugged my shoulders and thought, well, that's a great benefit. I knew nothing about it.
Okay.
And then I was lecturing down in a hotel in Florida, and the partitions are very thin. And I was listening. I was giving my lecture and listening to the gentleman who was lecturing next door. And he said, when we move the jaw downward and forward to a certain position, we open the airway and snoring stops and people sleep better. And then the light bulb went off.
Okay.
The whole time I was practicing craniofacial pain, I was also practicing sleep medicine.
And didn't
Only
know it.
I didn't know it.
Wow.
So naturally, I grabbed him by the collar, and we sat up all night talking about this. And then I started taking courses, and now I have 3,000 or 4,000 hours of postgraduate work in the field and 2 diplomates.
Wow. Tell me about the profile of some of your patients. Who comes in? Who presents to you?
Very tired people. people that don't sleep well. They have a myriad of problems, of medical problems. They can't concentrate. Sometimes they don't sleep in the same bedroom with the spouse because they snore so loudly. They have high blood pressure. They have heart disease. They have type 2 diabetes, they have dysmenorrhea, they have memory problems, they're physical wrecks.
Now, when
emotional wrecks.
Emotional and physical, some of the things you mentioned seem to occur a lot of times in the middle and late cycles or seasons of our lives. So what's the demographic of the client that, or the patient that comes into you?
We see patients ages 70, 75, 90.
Okay.
Had a 98-year-old the other day.
Okay.
So the demographic is all over the map right now. The more we discover about sleep disorders, the more we realize more people have them.
Well, is there something we should be doing at a younger age besides just getting 7 hours of sleep? I mean, I'm thinking some of the things you talked about also are cousins of stress. And I know for me, that was one of the great sleep disorder triggers.
You have to listen to your children sleep. You have to make sure that they're not grinding and clenching their teeth and wearing their primary teeth down. They have to go to a pediatrician who's oriented towards making sure the airway is open, that they're breathing through the nose, exhaling through the mouth, and that they're active youngsters, but yet not hyperactive.
Okay. All right. So as I listen to you now, I'm thinking, how do you promote your successes? How do you promote you? Do you go around, hey, you having a hard time sleeping? Do you have jaw pain? Come see me, Dr. A. How do you get your story? How do you get your research out and your successes out?
That's a difficult job. Basically, it's been word of mouth as far as I've been concerned.
Okay.
I've been in practice for 51 years.
Wow.
And I have had a patient base that's tremendous. And as I've grown and evolved into different areas of research and study, I've brought that technology to my patients. And I stay in constant contact with them through newsletters, through appearances in various organizations. And they realize that if they want up-to-date information, they come see me. And so they refer friends and family, and it's wonderful.
And to me, reference is the best way to go through a door.
Exactly.
That means you've had a good experience and you're passing it on. Now, you mentioned something earlier. This show is intergenerational. And I ask you, Dr. A, should we start earlier, you know, attending to our sleep habits? What about kids, sleep, and ADHD? Is there a relationship in all of that?
We think there is definitely a relationship.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
I can talk about it a little bit. The children, when they don't oxygenate well, it affects their entire growth and development so that the airway doesn't develop properly. And they end up not getting enough oxygen. We call it hypoxia.
Yeah.
And this affects first the autonomic nervous system and then the various organs that are being deprived of the proper oxygenation. And we find that things like bedwetting, hyperactivity go away when we open that airway and allow the child to breathe, and they start to develop normally.
Let's do a bit of role play. Mother comes in. She's heard about you. She's heard you say what you just said. And her child has been diagnosed, is wearing the label ADHD. How would you work with that mother and child to implement some of the things you just described? Or implement, I should say, minimize. Yeah.
We do a very thorough examination. Our first appointment is an hour and a half.
Okay.
And you can't diagnose this in 15 minutes.
Right.
And we do a very thorough examination. We do an interview with both the mother and the child to get an idea of what's going on. And meanwhile, you have an hour and a half to observe the child and their actions. We do a thorough oral examination, physical examination, and then I can render an opinion as to where to start. And the most important place to start is to make sure that the nasal passages and the throat are open and clear, that there's no retardation of the growth of the jaw. Because the tongue is attached to the jaw.
Right.
If you have a small jaw, your tongue has no place to go but to occlude the airway. So we have to evaluate growth and development. We have to make sure tonsils, allergies aren't involved, adenoids, nasal bones, and congestion in the nose and sinus. All these things are important to clear away. And many times when we clear that much away, the problems disappear.
And that then impacts the behavior that they're...
Exactly.
Wow. So with that, it's almost like a silver bullet. How do you make that known so that we don't have to give them a pill all the time? How do we make known that there's a behavioral change that you could make that might minimize those symptoms? What do we do?
We do a lot of writing,
okay,
and publishing. We also lecture all over the place to various organizations,
mm-hmm,
to try and get the word out. And my fellow professionals, we educate primary care physicians,
mm-hmm,
pediatricians, endocrinologists, orthodontists, all in the idea in mind of having them look at a patient a little differently rather than throw a pill at them.
I have been a teacher, elementary school teacher, and elementary school principal. And I would have loved this treasure because I then would have invited someone like yourself in to talk to teachers and then to PTA so parents can know. So do you ever have that opportunity to stand in the educational environment and talk about what you're sharing now?
I have in the past. My thrust has usually been to educate the professionals.
Okay. All right.
The primary care people, the people that are delivering health care, so that they know what to look for.
All right. Okay. I still would have wanted you in my school.
I would love to have gone to school.
So you keep using the we word. Who are your collaborating people?
Well, aside from my fellow professionals,
okay,
the other doctors that I work with in various specialties in medicine, I have, my staff is very highly trained,
mm-hmm,
and we do most of our work, our diagnostic work, using computers,
mm-hmm,
using special X-ray machines, using all kinds of new technology to very painlessly and very accurately diagnose the problem and then construct various appliances and physical therapy for these patients to bring them around to normalcy.
So when you said construct appliances, if I come into you and I present and you evaluate me, you can give me something to put inside my mouth to correct airflow? What would that be?
Correct. We have probably 12 to 14 different appliances based on what we find.
Oh, okay.
So nobody gets the same shoe.
Nobody gets the same shoe. And only if the shoe fits will it work, right?
Exactly.
Okay, let's do a little bit more role play. It's bedtime. Wife says to husband, "Oh, honey, not tonight. I have a headache. And, you know, I've had this headache for a long time and just not sleeping well." What kind of conversation would you have with that couple if they walked into your office and they shared, "Hey, we're having a hard time being married and being married and romantic because this headache won't go away"?
First thing I'd find out is why she has a headache. And part of the problem may be that she isn't sleeping well because he's snoring.
Good. Tell me. Talk.
And it's like secondhand. Excuse me.
That's okay.
It's like secondhand smoke.
All right.
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
When one snores,
mm-hmm,
the other has the same symptoms of sleep disorder as though they had sleep disorder. Blood pressure goes up, blood volume goes up. They don't sleep well. They don't get to the proper levels of sleep. They don't secrete growth hormone to repair the body.
Mm-hmm.
And they wake up as exhausted as the guy who's been snoring and stops breathing 10 or 20 or 30 or 60 times an hour.
What is snoring?
Snoring is a warning.
Oh.
Snoring is a warning. There is a blockage and a vibration in the airway. And snoring is sometimes more dangerous than sleep apnea because the internal carotid arteries, which are very near the airway, vibrate as a result of snoring. And to protect themselves, they build up plaque on the inside, calcium.
And on the inside of your throat?
On the inside of the artery.
Wow.
And the first thing you know, a piece breaks off, they have a stroke, and there they go. So people that snore are four times more likely to have a stroke than people that don't.
So let me repeat this. It's a warning, and this is, I've never heard this before. So I'm landing here. I'm excited to know it, but people need to hear it because it's critical information. Just like I think this body is so miraculous in its ability to heal itself and to tell us, hey, I'm in trouble, fix this. What you're telling me then is snoring is one of those signs. Hey, guys, I'm in trouble. And then how am I going to, well, first of all, my husband wouldn't go with me and hear this conversation. But how can I fix him? Do I go to another room? What do I do so that I get the sleep I need if he's snoring?
Most of the time, that's the answer.
Is it?
Most of the time, the husband.
And it could be the wife snoring, please.
Wives snore too, but usually they take care of it. Women are much more attuned to their bodies than men are.
Huh.
And with men, it's a big macho thing.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a big snore too.
Exactly.
Wow. I got to sit on that one for a while. Meanwhile, while I'm sitting on that and thinking how I might use the information, tell me about some of the major successes you've had that's brought you a lot of joy based on the research you've done.
I've had so many major successes that it's a pleasure to go to work in the morning because it isn't work.
I love that.
If you go in every day and you work with and you associate with friendly, competent people and you meet wonderful people and you can turn their lives around without cutting them, without putting them on machines, without giving them pills, there is no better career.
You said something key that I don't know that our listeners understand. You just said without cutting them.
Correct. No surgery.
So it's non-invasive.
Correct.
Be more specific about that.
What we do is non-invasive. Mm-hmm. It's removable. It's reversible. It's comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
We have a wonderful track record of people, of accountability and people wearing these appliances.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they come in 4 years later and want another one.
Hmm.
Or they come in and say, now I want one for my house down at the beach. Or I want one to put on my boat, you know, so that I'm never without it. It's amazing, but when you, at the end of your appointment or at the end of your day, a patient turns around to you and says, you've changed my life. You've saved my marriage. You've saved my job. There's no fee that compensates for that. That's the best thing that can happen to me.
So what I envision as you talk to me is why I haven't turned on the radio or TV and heard a man or woman say, you saved my marriage. You saved my life. Dr. A did A, B, C, D. Are you advertising? Do people know what you do?
No.
Because I didn't. I was thrilled. Do you know how I found out about you?
No.
I have a wonderful, wonderful friend who just happens to work for you. And I had neck surgery in May, and she became my Uber angel. She would come and take me places because she knew I would sneak and try and drive. And I was talking about my pain one day because it was severe. And she was letting me out. And she talked about you and some of the things you're doing. I said, really? I need to talk to him. And I'm talking to you now.
Right.
So over the airways, and we're international as well as intergenerational, what are some tips and techniques anyone listening can do to help us either diagnose what the issue is, or to get in contact with someone like you? What do we do?
First of all, if you don't feel rested, if you have the symptoms of sleep apnea, and you can go up on my website, you'll see all the symptoms listed and then more, but you just don't feel rested when mm-hmm. you get up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Your spouse says you snored all night. You wake up 5-6 times a night.
Mm-hmm.
And you're falling asleep during the day at very, very necessary meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Or some of my patients even report that they fall asleep at a stop sign or while they're waiting for a light, they fall asleep at the wheel of a car.
Oh, my.
It's watching television. You're never rested. You're never on your game.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't concentrate.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's time to get a checkup. And among the things that we do, we have a home testing device where we can actually, once we examine you and there's a good inkling that we have a problem, we put a home testing device on your arm. You sleep in your own bed.
Mm-hmm.
You bring it back to us in the morning. We plug it into our computer. It gives us hundreds of pages of data.
Mm-hmm.
And what we then do is transfer that to a sleep cardiologist who verifies, number one, we have an absolutely accurate test.
Okay.
And two, this is what you have. And three, these are the recommendations. And we have three ways of treating the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Oral appliances.
Mm-hmm.
The next is surgery. And the last is a CPAP machine. I should say in reverse order. It's a CPAP machine, then surgery.
Okay.
The surgery is rigorous. It's invasive, and it's non-reversible, and it's a last resort. People don't like to do it. It's not easy surgery.
Uh-huh.
And many times the tissue comes back, and then they have scar tissue, and then they end up in my office, and I've got a real problem.
Yeah.
So any problem that you have in life, you use the simplest way possible to solve it.
Did you hear that, listeners? Any problem you have in life, the simplest way is the best way.
Correct.
Now, you mentioned a lot of things that are technology-based. So I'm going to ask you, 15 to 20 years ago, could you do what you do now in terms of diagnostics and treatment?
Yes. I could have done it, but with less accuracy and success.
Talk about that a little bit more.
Well, our technology has advanced tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
And we have computers now that are programmed to help us not only more accurately diagnose sleep disorders,
mm-hmm.
but to tell us what kind of success we have.
So you're now able to get the feedback, the measurements.
Correct.
And so you can correct in between that.
Right. And our appliances are adjustable. So if we don't hit the nail on the head the first time, we can adjust it forward or back or up, or up and down to make it just right.
What I'm going to do is take a short break, and I want to come back. I have some fun questions that I'd like to ask you. Okay?
Okay.
Stay close, everybody. Dr. A, one of the things I noticed when I was researching you, there was a bullet that said, you created an oral screening program at the U.S. Department of State. What was that like? What were the benefits? Why were you doing that?
That was very early in my career.
Mm-hmm.
My first office was right across the street from the State Department.
Okay.
And I started getting hundreds of patients from Department of State, and they spend a great deal of time overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And they come back for 4 to 6 weeks, sometimes a couple months. And they would come into my office, and I would examine them, and they were train wrecks. They had periodontal disease. They had rampant cavities. They had missing teeth. Their nutrition was bad. They were in terrible condition. And after hundreds of these patients came through, I reported to the medical director at the State Department at that time my findings. I said, these people are just being slaughtered overseas by unqualified dentists, and they're not being taken care of properly, and they're all going to lose their teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no reason to do that today. Well, he had a very sympathetic ear,
mm-hmm.
and the first thing you know, he said, well, why don't we screen them?
Mm-hmm.
And so that we can at least advise them what condition they're in, and those that are in such dire straits, maybe we can create a team who can redline these people and try and get them back to base as fast as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we did.
That speaks to what you said before, the simplest way to get it done. Well, let's find out what's going on ahead of time. And apparently that wasn't a part of their program, right?
No. They had no dental screening. They always came in, had medical exams, but they had no dental screening.
How interesting is that? Let me ask. I came in here with a question because sometimes I do have a hard time sleeping. And I have tried everything I'm going to ask you about to no avail. Exercising before you go to bed. Talk to me about that. Is that going to...
It depends. Some people are very stimulated by exercise.
Uh-huh.
And that's probably not the right time to ratchet things up. It's probably the best time to kind of cool it and lay back.
So the type of exercise, because I have to exercise every day, but I hear you saying we don't need to do a lot of physical. What about yoga and Tai Chi?
Yoga is wonderful.
Okay.
Tai Chi is wonderful.
Because what they're doing is lowering my pressure and my breathing.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay, so now I know it's a type of exercise before bed, not just exercise.
Right.
Okay. How about reading in bed? I saw somewhere, reading in bed does not make you sleepy.
I go both ways on that.
Okay.
I find that sometimes reading in bed is very good for me because my mind is always working. And if I can pick up a novel that's not too stimulating, it's interesting, it's a total difference what I do all day, I find that relaxing and I'll drop off to sleep.
Okay. So it's the type of reading.
Correct.
The type of exercise.
Correct.
Then I read something that you should have an average temperature for sleeping that is lower than what you may have in the day. Is that true or
correct?
Not?
Nice, cool room.
Nice, cool room. Can we have covers?
Sure.
Snuggle?
Snuggle. Whatever makes you happy, whatever makes you comfortable is very good in my opinion.
Well, now I want you to fantasize for a moment. I want you to dream big. Suppose you had an opportunity to have a blank check to do with in terms of your passion. Describe what you would do.
I would fund my research project.
Well, talk about it now. You got to sell me. I got the check. You got to.
what we're doing is I practice in the home of the National Football League, the NFLPA building.
Okay.
And I'm part of a team which includes the Living Heart Foundation, the Professional Players Health Alliance, the Alpha Center, and several other groups, all combined to try and bring health to former players of various athletic organizations and to screen them to see what has happened to them over the years. And in doing so, I realize that we can't bring them all to my office. I'd like to bring my office to them.
Okay.
So the very complex instruments that we use to help us diagnose and treat and manufacture sleep appliances, in my opinion, can be miniaturized so that we can take one instrument and do the whole thing in a venue. And
so
my research is to try and put together technology that already exists and have it work as a seamless entity so that we can take it to the battlefield if we have to. We can take it to various trucking organizations where they have conventions of 5 and 10,000 people. Truckers have the worst lifestyle in the world. They have they die at a much earlier rate than the average American because they're under such stress and they don't eat properly. They don't get enough rest, and it's a big problem. Air traffic controllers, military people, pilots, people that operate ships and barges, train operators. Well, you know about all the train wrecks. You've had the people falling asleep and the engineers falling asleep. These things can be diagnosed, hopefully, in their own venue, and appliances can be made for them very rapidly without interrupting their whole life to do this.
As I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, if you look at these subpopulations, truckers, air traffic, military, pilots, ships, planes, trains, and everything else, that's evidence. That's evidence right there. And it's absolutely evidence that...
Mothers,
yes. That's evidence that our lives are impacted by negligence that doesn't have to be there. Again,
correct.
Simple.
Correct.
And so I also think I heard you say, I'm not looking so much to build something new as leverage what we have and make it more easily accessible. Take it to the battlefield, I think is what you said. So to me, that's a critical discussion, because right now I'm looking at NFL football season, basketball, baseball, head injuries, all of that. You're saying, hey, you know what? It doesn't have to be this hard. We don't have to wait this long.
Correct.
Wow.
And there's a simpler way to do it, and I'm researching that. And it takes money. I mean, patients come in, they want to be paid for their time, and I agree with it.
You know, suddenly I said I had a blank check. I wish I did. I wish I did have a, 'cause this is critical. This really is. It's not stuff made in movies. It's our life.
No, but it's critical for a patient's health.
Mm-hmm.
Because once they fall into this sleep disorder,
yes,
problem,
uh-huh,
it's a slippery slope. They develop all kinds of ancillary problems,
mm-hmm,
which eventually shorten their lives.
Wow.
And so if we can nip it in the bud and diagnose it early, there's no damage done.
If someone out there was listening to you and they said, you know what, I want to talk to him some more. I want more. How can they get in touch with you? What's your website? How do we do that?
Website is the Alpher Center,
mm-hmm,
or my name, Dr. Elliot Alpher.
Mm-hmm.
My office is in the, it's 1133 20th Street.
Mm-hmm.
Have a telephone number. It's right there on the website.
Okay.
And they can get in touch with me anyway, any of those ways.
Listeners, did you hear that? This passionate man who has taught us so much in such a very short time is saying, it's not over. You can reach him. You can hear more. You can learn more. What I find exciting is we have a way to accommodate our loved ones snoring. I'm excited about that one. I didn't know, and it's difficult if you live alone to figure out you snore. That's a difficult. And I didn't figure it out until my last surgery, and my girlfriend came and told me I had embarrassed the family name because I was in recovery and she could hear me all the way down the hall. But then I also understood that was a normal kind of response to the kind of surgery I had. But be not despaired. There is hope. There is relief does have a pain, has a name, a pain. Relief has a pain. Relief has a name.
Relief of pain has a name.
Relief of pain has a name. Let me say it slowly. Relief of pain has a name.
Right.
And Dr. Alpher has been, what'd you say, 50 years?
51 years.
51 years focusing. And we all know you get what you focus on. And I am totally, totally, totally thrilled that he has come to spend this time with us today. I think I'm sitting here looking at him, and I feel very comfortable, although we're talking about something that has made me uncomfortable in the past. I think I know what a step to take next to make me better. And I want to thank you for that.
It's been my pleasure.
I like to leave each show with something inspirational and encouraging to my listeners. And I call it my doggy bag that they can take with in case they find themselves saying, oh, I'm so tired. I can't do this anymore. Why am I here? I try to come up with things that are inspirational. Well, last month I started something because I was always saying to them, last month I started an exercise so that people are now involved. And I said, listen, I want you to repeat after me two times a day. The first time, after you finish brushing your teeth so you're awake and alive, I want you to look in that mirror and stare at you and say, I am worthy. To say, I am not alone. I am not my circumstances. Again, I am worthy. I am not alone. I am not my circumstances. I think some of the things that trip us up as women, we keep thinking that we are what is happening to us. And that becomes a roadblock. Ladies, no, no, no. You are someone that you were created to be. You are a designer's original. You are not what has happened to you. If you get in the habit of thinking, oh, something bad happened to me, I'm bad. That's shame. And shame is the thief of joy. So I'm going to say it again. In front of that mirror, I want you to say, I am worthy. I am not alone. I am not my circumstances. And when you walk out that door or when you walk in that door, I want you to refuse to be refused. You hear me? Refuse to be refused. I want you to think about how we did today, whether you learned something new about something old, whether it just felt good to connect. And I have just I found this one. I want to share just a quick little story with you to encourage you. Bonnie St. John lost her right leg at 5 years old to a bone disorder. She jokingly referred to herself as a one-legged African-American girl from San Diego with no money and no snow to go skiing. As a black woman with one leg, she faced more hurdles than most. She survived child sexual abuse, family dysfunction, divorce, race and gender discrimination, and navigating the world on an artificial limb. Once Bonnie was speaking at a conference in Worcester, Massachusetts, she wore a skirt and as close to the heels as she could while she was wearing her titanium leg. She says to the audience, "You want to see a miracle?" She walked across that stage. The audience went wild with applause. Bonnie often goes to hospitals to visit patients and gives talks to people who are facing obstacles that seem insurmountable, like the one she had. She met a mother one time whose 13-year-old son had been horribly burned on his face and arms. The mother turned to Bonnie and asked, "Will my son ever live a normal life?" "No," Bonnie said. "He ought to aim higher." The story reminds me that one should always aim higher and that impossible is merely a word to describe the degree of difficulty. I'm going to have our theme song take us out with Mr. Tony Walker on piano. You take care. Be well. Till next time. Bye.